They asked me to make the speech. Oh, I came up off and on, yeah.
What date was the formal opening? What did you do on that day, the formal opening of the whole Seaway?
Well, that was the date that, of course, the President Eisenhower came up. Wait, the one that I made a speech, it was dedicating the Snell Lock. I wasn't dedicating the Seaway. That was done by Eisenhower and Queen Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. That was a formal dedication. And we went down, Ann and I both went to that. We went down to Messina and stayed at the hotel there. And, or we went down in the morning, I guess it was. Gosh, I can't remember anymore. Anyway, there's a lot of doings there. Then we went to Montreal by car and spent the day there, just the day, and went out to have Eisenhower and the Queen meet there. It was put on by the Canadians. And there was a big crowd, of course, but we had a special section. And we saw the Queen come into it. We had a room at the Mount Royal, and they came there, and we were up on the balcony to watch them come in. The Queen, just in, that was informal. We heard that she was coming in there, so we waited around and watched her. And then we went to a dinner that night put on by the mayor of Montreal. But that afternoon they had these doings. We were taken out to it and so on. And then the next day we went back that night, late at night, to our hotel in Messina. After the dinners, I remember. Yeah. And then the next day we were to meet the Queen. That's where these pictures were taken. And the President wasn't there. He met her and in Montreal, see. And that was quite an experience. Of course, it was fog and rain, and the boat was delayed to beat the band. The whole program was thrown off 2 or 3 hours. And we lined up. Of course, all the congressmen were there. There was just a few, but I was from that district, so all the protocol fellows were there. And so Ann and I were about 7th or 8th in line. I remember. Next to us was Dick Wigglesworth, who was a great friend of mine, and Mrs. Wigglesworth, who was a fine lady, I guess, but quite a social climber. I think I got that impression. And they were below us. See, that tickled Ann, because he was ambassador to Canada. See, he was below me. And the Queen and the Prince finally got there. And got off their yacht, and we were lined up there, and they came right down the line and met us, and they were very nice. They just shake hands and say, Your Majesty. And that was that. And then they made a speech there that picture's of. And then they went to the dedication where Rockefeller was to the state, or to the dam. And Rockefeller made a speech, but I was surprised because Rockefeller's pretty good. But that day, Nixon was 10 times as good. First place, Rockefeller's speech was too long, and he read it all. Nixon got up there, had a note in front of him, and it was good, see. He was awful good. And everybody was interested. And the Queen, I remember, stood up there in the podium, and there was a breeze going. Of course, it was half outdoors. Mm-hmm. And her skirts flew up. Of course, she had a paper there to read. And she held a paper. Her skirts blew up kind of high, and she just held her paper like that very quietly, took her skirt and put it down. She had pretty legs, too. I told Ann, too bad didn't let him go. And when we got through with that, they told us the car to take us back was down the line, number so-and-so, limousine. We got down there, And the two Nixon girls were in it. That was their car, and they knew it when they signed us, but said there's room in that car, so we rode back with the two Nixon girls. There were little girls then. That is about 12 or 13, something like that. And, but I was awful glad because that night that we spent in that hotel, of course, the one night, the one big night in their whole lives down there, they'd advertised it was air conditioned, see, it was hot as a deuce. And of course, the air conditioning didn't work. I didn't sleep at all, so hot. And so we were awful glad to get back here, home, and take a shower.
How did your social life in Washington change as you stayed there longer?
Well, Ann's was better and better. But we were getting older. And we didn't go to so many parties. They had a lot of parties. We went to all the delegation parties. Generally, some fellow in the delegation would invite the delegation, their wives, the Republican delegation. See. And then you'd have parties for Democrats and Republicans in New York, or you'd have the New York State Society would have a party. And that was always, I thought, they did nicely about it, but it wasn't much fun because there's too many there. And they'd have receptions, the housing people would put on a party. And they'd invite all the members of the Banking Currency Committee. And Federal Reserve would, you'd go down there a lot. And you'd go to the president when he'd have some appointee, like Assistant Secretary of the Treasury or something, when he'd swear in at the White House, he'd ask us down to watch the ceremony, or a member of the Home Loan Bank Board, or the FDIC. Joe Barr had been on our committee, and when he was made Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, he was made first put in the FDIC. Why, we all went down. And Jess Wolcott had been chairman, been ranked and chairman of the Bank Currency Committee that time. When Joe Martin was Speaker, Jess Wolcott was chairman. And I was a great friend of his. I mean, we were, of course, good friends. We were both in the same outfit in the First World War. We went back to 1st Division reunion in New York together. So he'd have the fellows in the Banking Currency down for a party when they'd have somebody. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
Were there many trips you took abroad for Congress, like they, right?
No,
like
I just went. We went. Well, I did not till I got to be ranking. We went in 58. I wasn't ranking, but I didn't go because of the, I went because I was on the Joint Economic Committee, mm-hmm. made up of the House and Senate. And that's, they asked me to go.
What were your children doing during the latter part of the 40s, after the war was over?
Okay. Got married in 46 to Dr. Bullard. He'd been in the medical corps. Out of Harvard Medical School. Graduated from there. And Bill was in the Air Corps until at the end of the war. He was a pilot. And he went back to Cornell. And he didn't stay very long. His marks weren't good enough, so they tried it again. And finally, he wanted to go to work, and he got married a little later than that.
Did Kay go to school?
She went to Dana Hall, and then to Cornell, and then she went to the Presbyterian Hospital Nursing School in New York. She graduated from that during the war. She was a cadet nurse.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how she would have met her husband.
That's what she did. Meet him there. Yeah. Yeah. He was interning at Presbyterian.
Did Bill go overseas?
No. He didn't get, he was just going to get his wings. He was a cadet pilot and had flown everything. They were just going to give him his wings when they found this, that he had gallstones. So they operated on him at Walter Reed Hospital in Washington. and he couldn't go back flying for 6 months. So by the time he got his wings, the war was just about over. So then he flew up here, puddle jumper. Then he went back to college. Or to college, he hadn't gone because he joined up as soon as he got out of graduate, the day he graduated from high school.
How'd you feel about that?
Well, all right with me. He had to go. I wanted to go.
He graduated in the middle of the war?
He graduated in the... '42 or '43.
And then you had another son?
No. Well, James.
James.
Yeah, he was a teacher. He was turned down by the draft. And so he got a job teaching. He graduated from Harvard. He went to Tap before that. He graduated from there, cum laude, and went to Harvard. Graduated there, and then he got a job teaching in a school in Cambridge. And then he tried writing some after that. And then he eventually got a job at the First National Bank. He's been with them ever since.
In Cambridge?
Well, the First National Bank's in Boston. It's the biggest bank in New England. They've got branches in Cambridge. They've got branches all over.
Is James the youngest?
No, he's the oldest.
Oh.
Congress was in session, wasn't it, when Roosevelt died?
No.
No. So you were back home here?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were in Washington, probably, but it wasn't in session, as I remember.
Did you go back?
I think that was part of the... Wasn't it about April, the first part of April that he died?
Middle part.
Middle part of April. Well, they always had an Easter recess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the recess was on.
Mm-hmm. Did you go back to Washington?
Didn't. Most everybody else did, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Why didn't you go?
Well, I didn't. A lot of these people from New York, Philadelphia, Buffalo, and all those places, they get on there quickly, easily. In those days, it took me, it was an awful job getting back and forth. There was one train here, a sleeper you take to New York, then you go across town to the Pennsylvania, and you take a train from there, and it's 4 hours and generally late, so it takes about 18, 20 hours to get there. And I...
You wouldn't have gotten there on time.
Well, that's why it's a lot of people, all these fellas from Boston and New York and Philadelphia and all those, Pittsburgh and all those, they can get in there quickly.
Mm-hmm. During the war, had the congressman had special privileges about tires and things like that that other people were having trouble with?
No, that's what I know.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it hard to get tires and to get things like that?
Well, no, I didn't use a car hardly at all. We didn't.
No. You didn't use a car while in Washington?
I used a car down there, but I didn't use it for anything except going to the office or back, and I didn't use it very much then. I'd take a taxi.
Mm-hmm. Did you have your own car in Washington?
Yeah, well, we only had one car.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Ford.
Mm-hmm. Was your wife interested in politics?
No.
At all.
Well, she knows how she wants to vote. She started as a candidate, but she doesn't. No, not.
Did she go out campaigning with you?
No. Well, she did when she was invited. I mean, lots of times she'd go to dinners where they'd want your wife to, and especially at women's clubs, to have a meeting or something, and they'd naturally want her along.
Did she like to go to those? Or?
Not very well. Well, she did if she had some good friends there. There's a place where...
Did you find campaigning fun or tiresome?
Tiresome, very. Although I had a lot of good friends that you'd meet, and that part was nice, but I never could. Ken Keating was the best at that I ever saw. I met him once in Potsdam to drive him to Malone. And he came into Potsdam with somebody brought him into the car. I was going to meet him there. And he took about 15 minutes and he went right up and down the street. I'm Ken Keating. Run to the Senate. How are you? And to everybody on the street. Well, I couldn't do that. I never did it. I mean, I hand it to him for doing it, but I just...
Did you ever have a campaign receptions here at the house?
No. The only time we'd have is the night, election night, by some of our family and close friend might come in to listen to the returns.
For you, the worst part of a campaign was usually before the primary decision, and then all down.
No, there's no, only one primary fight that I had to mount in. The others didn't mount in.
Did you win by more and more votes every year, or?
No, it depended on the national thing. Sometimes it depended on whether or not the unions gave some money to my opponents quite a lot. A lot of times, and when they'd get more money, my vote would come down.
When was the last year you ran?
1963. Wait a minute, I got through in January 65, so 2 years before that'd be January 63. So, in November of 62.
November of 62.
Would be the last time I ran, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's while Kennedy was in office, right?
You didn't run for the Goldwater election.
Sure, I ran every 2 years.
Yeah. After. So you were in the running for the Goldwater election then?
Yes.
Did that hurt you badly, or?
No. Okay. I thought Goldwater was a darn good man himself. They all got after him to beat the band, but they didn't, because they said he was too conservative, but they didn't study what he said, and a lot of the stuff they adopted later on. People don't realize that.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the, in your opinion, what were some of the best points in Goldwater's platform?
Oh, I don't remember too much, except he wanted to reduce spending, which I thought the federal government was spending too much money. Mm-hmm. He wanted to balance the budget, which I thought should be done. And he wanted to, I can't remember all the things, but along that line, he didn't want the unions to take over the country. And he didn't want the radicals to take over the country. He wanted also the states to have more power to run their own affairs, not have the federal government try to run everything.
Do you agree with that?
You bet I do. Very much so. What do we know about the state of Alabama, how what they should do down here? Or Arizona?
Do you like Governor Rockefeller?
Yeah, I like him. I think he spends too much money. I mean, that he is, but I hand it to him because he taxes for it and he balances his budget. I hand him that. And I think he's a top-notch administrator. I think he knows the machinery of the state probably better than anybody since Al Smith, or Governor Dewey.
Did you ever go to the conventions? You know, the
went to one, and that cured me.
Where was that?
In Chicago.
What year?
Well, it was soon after I went in. It was fall of 1940.
You didn't like it?
No.
Why?
Well, I suppose the main reason was that it was awful hot down there in Chicago, and it wasn't air conditioned, and it was a terrible thing. You just run sweat off you. I remember we were staying with Alice, my sister, Mrs. Castle, her name was Ward Castle, and he had a warehouse there. They lived in Hinsdale, just outside Chicago. And before we went into one night session, we drove in early and went into his warehouse down where they kept their chocolate, There was about 60 in there. And boys, we sat around in these boxes and got cool. And they had a section for members of Congress. And of course, you were supposed to be dressed up. Well, I spent both afternoons in the university club swimming pool. And Ann and Alice, my sister, went to an air-conditioned movie. It was the only place you could get cool, you know. It was the hottest time that you ever saw. And I remember after the first day, instead of dressing up, I took an old shirt I had, like this, except it was an awful old one, and I had long sleeves, and I cut off the sleeves myself with a pair of scissors. And I went in with this shirt and nothing else than a shirt outside some old seersucker pants I had. And Bobby Grant from Indiana, he was an awful nice fella. He was a member of Congress. He came up to me, he said, "You look cool and I resent it."
Were you the only one dressed that way?
No, finally someone else came to it. But I didn't see him, but I knew, I didn't care. We were sitting on the gallery, we weren't on the floor or anything.
Mm-hmm. You never were a delegate, though.
No, I wouldn't. But that convention, and then they spalled everything up. On the seats, I called up. Len Hall was in charge. Was a big shot, and he was of course he was later a much bigger shot, but he was a very close friend of mine. And he said, "Well, I'll fix up with tickets for your sister and so on." Well, I had an awful time. It's Sunday before the convention. I spent an hour on the telephone, and these kids or young folks that were at the convention center, the Republican center or headquarters, they didn't care about anything. "Oh yeah, we've got to take it sometime, I don't know when," all that stuff. They just burned you up. They were just out there to have a good time, so I just, from then on, I crossed all the conventions. And it was a good thing too, because actually, you see, from at that time I had four counties. And two counties, they alternated. Two counties would have the delegate, and the other, each of them have one delegate, and two other counties, each of them would have an alternate. So there would be four to go, see. Well, then when I got five counties, then they made a fair arrangement. The four counties that didn't have the congressman did the same thing.
I see. And the county that did have the congressman didn't say...
Wouldn't have any delegate. Uh-huh. That was Franklin County.
What were your four counties originally?
Well, I started with St. Lawrence, Franklin, Clinton, and Essex.
Then you had five. Which one was that?
Well, then they dropped Clinton and Essex, and it changed five times. They dropped Clinton and Essex, and I had Franklin, St. Lawrence, Jefferson, Lewis, and Herkimer. Mm-hmm. Then later on, they changed that again, and instead of Herkimer, I had Oswego. So all that time, most of the time I was down there, I had the smallest county. Well, Lewis is a smaller county, but the smallest county, you might say, and what it way up in one end of the district, so you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, that caused some conversation around bigger counties.
Mm-hmm. They tried to unseat you, in other words.
Well, that's the only time I had a primary fight that really amounted to anything. It was in 46. Mm-hmm. That's when Grant Daniels was from St. Lawrence County.
Is Oswego County Republican, basically?
Yeah. And of course, it was when it was new to me why I went down there and talked to him. The county chairman were always very nice to me, because I'd always, when I went to Herkimer, I guess I told you that mm-hmm. I went to the leader and said, "I'm an organization Republican." And they all were very nice to me. As a matter of fact, later on in Oswego, they had the biggest day that I ever put in for me down there. They'd had a harbor thing, which I got through in Congress for them. A breakwater out there, the federal government, to so they could bring different types of ships in and have fuel ships come in and have coal come in there and ship to the Great Lakes and so on. And the Chamber of Commerce put on a day for me down there. And he asked me to be down there early, and I went down. About, well, I got there, forgotten, and for lunch, they had a luncheon for me, and I got there, and all the light poles all up and down the street was covered Clarence Kilburn Day. And I went into the hotel to get my room. There was a great big sign across the hotel, Clarence Kilburn Day in Oswego. And right, I was dumbfounded, and I went in to I couldn't pay for my room. That was all taken care of, and the newspaper got out a special edition. A lot to do. Hmm. Big dinner that night.
Did you enjoy things like that?
Well, I was enjoyed that rather than having everybody jumping on me. It was more fun than that.
Did you enjoy the in Washington, like the park, going to all these parties all the time? Was that so?
No. Yeah. A lot of them we had fun at, and a lot of them were bores. Oh, you'd enjoy going to the White House, and you'd enjoy. We went to some embassy parties that were awful nice. You enjoy all those things. Some of them were pretty flat. We went to a couple of the New York State Society. But you didn't know hardly anybody around, and you feel you have to show up and so on.
With the embassy parties, what occasion were they given for?
Well, they'd have different, no special occasions. Remember the one that we went to the British Embassy, and when there, at the time they had a garden party, and it was hot. Oh, boys, it was hot. And they had a tent out in the yard with different ices and punch and so on. Well, they got a big building. I don't know if you've ever seen it there. They got a nice embassy in Washington. We circulated around there for a while, and then I walked up the steps of the embassy, and the building itself was all dark and cool. It wasn't air conditioned, but the big brick building was cool in there. And I went in and I found some Britishers that were sitting around there, and I said, boys, this is a nice place you got here. Cool, sit down, and I said, what about a drink of scotch? And he said, why, sure. So he went to his desk or something, got out a drink of scotch, and we sat there and had a highball, and stayed cool for a while, and I went out and said goodbye. And my picture was in Life at that party. Hi. It just so happened. They had pictures of the party, and that one of the pictures shows me going up the steps into the embassy.
Were there many private parties just given by a circle of friends?
Well, yes. Well, they'd have parties at the Congressional Club, and they'd have parties at houses, dinner parties, and cocktail parties, and so on.
Where did you entertain? Not in your apartment?
No, we didn't. We entertained at the hotels. We had a start. We entertained at the Hay Adams, and then we entertained at the Carlton. Two or three times we entertained at the Americana. We entertained all the hotels like that. Statler, we had a dinner party at the Statler once, remember?
Were these to pay back for other dinner parties or for a special occasion?
Oh, well, both.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd generally have a party in my inauguration time. I'd have a party in my office. I'd have sandwiches and deviled eggs and tea and coffee and drink if anybody wanted one, but for lunch, because anybody went to the inauguration was at the Capitol. But then to see the parade, you'd have to go down to the White House. See, and it was about a mile and a half. So after the inauguration, you wouldn't where to get lunch, you see. There wasn't any place, really. So we'd have a place there. We had the fellow, General Decker. He after he became Chief of Staff, he was a great friend of George Caffey's, my secretary. And we'd have people from Clark Lawrence and his wife came there from down. He was an old Malone boy. He's married one of the McCormicks of Chicago, so he didn't have to worry about his money. And he has a farm, or a very historic place down in Virginia that he owns, the old slave quarters. He came up. So there's a lot of people. Anybody that was from Malone, for instance, you'd invite him, but he was going down there. And they'd stop in for lunch.
Did you have many visitors from Malone?
At first, quite a lot. And from Plattsburgh and Watertown and all around the district. But not as many as a lot of people. It was closer, see.
Did the duties of your secretaries change over the years? Were they doing less or more?
Oh, they were doing more. There always seemed to be more things to take on. It's when I got the ranking, became ranking Republican on the Banking Currency Committee. At that time, we didn't have any minority room. And we thought we ought to have a minority room. Well, Patton was chairman, and he wouldn't give us a minority room. And you couldn't find any rooms. He was looking for rooms because he blew the staff up from 7 to 45 right away, and the budget from 10,000 to 600,000. Quite a waste of money. A waste of time and a waste of effort, because he'd have these guys working on stuff that was just silly, to my opinion, I think. It didn't amount to anything. Well, anyway, George Caffrey found a little room right on our corridor, right at the end, right over the entrance. It was just a little room. It was kind of going around, there's a round place there. It was kind of, the room was in there, and that wasn't occupied. It had room for a desk, and there was a couch, and a couple of chairs, and a filing place, and a sink in it. It wasn't as big as this room, but it was a different shape. So I found that room, and I went over to Sam Rayburn. And Sam was quite a guy. And I told him, I said, I'd like to get a minority room for the minority members of the committee. So I want to get a minority staff. We had a staff member, but she was sitting right in the committee room, see. And there's a lot of times when we'd want to talk things over ourselves. And I explained it to him, and I said, well, he said, Clarence, where are you going to get a room? I said, we found one. You found one. I told him where it was, and he had a general idea, and he said, well, how the hell did you find it? Patton's been after me and after me and after me to have more rooms. And I said, well, I found this one. This isn't for Patton, this is for me. So he finally said, he looked at the map of the building, diagram of the building and everything. Finally looked up. All right, you're going to have it. That was the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Rayburn was...
He was that kind of a guy.
Yeah. He was quite powerful.
Oh, yes.
Was he probably the most powerful speaker that you've ever had?
Well, he was an awful good speaker, I thought. And so then when I was getting through, and Bill Widnall was going to become, when I had that room, we had a secretary on the banking currency payroll, see, and Patman wanted her to come in every Saturday or something, to be there to answer the phone in the committee room. And I said, no. See, she's the minority member. She just works for us, nobody else. Well, I had quite a long fight with him on it, but I finally won it. So she had nothing to do with the committee. She was just for the Republican members. Now they've got a staff down there of five or six for the minority members. And they have their own room and everything else, but that was the start of it. And so that girl, it was very good, because it gave me, in effect, another girl. Mm-hmm. She, all the Republican members knew that they could go up to her, anything to do with the committee, and give her dictation or have her do anything for them they wanted, having to do with the committee, not their own work. But she did a lot of work for me, because she'd come in and help out my office when the fire bulletins came in or something like that. So that, in effect, it gave me another office where Marion Cooney was sick. She'd come in for when Marion was take the place of her.
Did you vote for the Rayburn office building?
No. I voted against it.
That was quite a stink.
I voted against it. Mm-hmm. I thought they had enough.
If
they weren't, each down there, I don't know what grows on them, they think they come in there and a member of Congress, they think they ought to be like President General Motors, see? The big office suite and all this. By some of those offices down there in the Rayburn building, I looked them over. Reception room and all this stuff. I never had a toilet. Or a kitchen. Someone made kitchens in them. They had one thing happen to Rayburn. Jesse Wolcott, when he was chairman of the committee, as I told you, he was a great friend of mine. And he and Rayburn were great friends. They just liked each other. And they used to go fishing together, the two of them, weekends and so on. And Jesse was quite a student. He was a very smart, able fellow from Michigan. And he told Rayburn fishing, while they were fishing, they were talking about this bill, you see, and he said, Jesse said to Rayburn, why, that bill's crazy. Rayburn, what are you talking about? That's a good bill. And he said, why, if you bring that bill up this week on the House floor, I'm going to say that it's retromingent. Do you know what it means? No, nobody does.
I don't think it's a word.
Oh, yes, it's a word. Yeah, but it's a word nobody ever heard of, but Jesse. And Rayburn says, what the hell does that mean? And Jesse says, it means to piss backwards. Rayburn says, if you say that word on the floor, I'll have you removed from the floor. So they came time for the bill, see. And Jesse got up there and made his speech. He was a good talker, a quiet kind of a fellow. And he said, this bill, provisions of this bill are retromingent. Nobody, of course, knew what it meant. The newspaper men didn't know what it meant. And it was quiet, and he went on. And Raymond didn't do anything, of course. And he turned right around to the speaker. Mr. Speaker, this bill is retromingent. And Raymond, of course, didn't want to do anything. He knew, Jesse knew he couldn't, because nobody knew what it meant. He was making
And what was the outcome of that?
Oh, I've forgotten about the bill. That was just, Jesse was telling me about it one day, talking about Sam Rayburn.
Was he well-liked by the members of Congress?
Yes, but he was very stern.
What do you mean stern?
Well, he wouldn't put up with any nonsense. He was quite a... I asked him, once this screwball Ed Hall from Binghamton, I told you about, to put the bill in, well, he got a minister. You can get minister. I had this minister from here once open the house with prayer. You have to make arrangements before.
Congregational?
Yeah, or anything. You can get a rabbi, or you can get anybody. But John Williams was quite a man, and so I got permission from him to open the thing with prayer. Well, Ed Hall got a guy. A minister, he put in through the channels to open the house of prayer. And he got up there, and the first prayer, he had a light tan suit on, and he had a very loud tie on. And come to find out, he was one of these holy rollers from down there. He wasn't a minister of a real church, you know. I didn't know that till afterwards. And he got up and said, in his prayer, thank God for Edwin Arthur Hall and what a great congressman he was and so on, see. And I looked up and Sam Rayburn was bowing his head. He looked up, looked like that. Boy, was he mad. I went up to him afterwards and I said, Sam, of course everybody thought it was perfectly outrageous, and from then on they had to submit their prayers before before they could say them. So he said, well, I wanted to. But he said, I figured, he's a man of great judgment, he was. He said, I figured that if I stopped him, it would be blown up in all the papers. Mm-hmm. And as it was, it just passed almost unnoticed, you see. So he said, I thought I wouldn't. And he was undoubtedly correct. Because it had never been done before or since.
Is McCormick a good speaker?
Yes, but not as good as Rayburn. He was an awful nice fella, and he was always very nice to me. I don't know why, but he was. And, well, for instance, when I got through and I told Bill Widnall about this room, and I said, Bill, come here with me, and we stopped John McCormick. And I told John about the room, and I said, Patton's always been, he didn't want us to have a room, but we arranged and we got a room, and Speaker Rayburn gave me the room. And I said, I have the key to it. I said, I want Bill to be able to use it and keep it. Well, Rayburn said, of course you can keep it. That'd been the end of it, see. But instead of that, McCormick said, well, give him the key and we just won't say anything about it. You know, he was afraid later on that Patman would jump on him or something for it. Rayburn wasn't afraid of it.
What was the date that Patman increased the size of the committee so hugely?
The staff, you mean? As soon as he came in as chairman. Mm-hmm. Spence was in there before that. Mm-hmm. And I got along fine with Spence. After Jesse Wolcott, then Jesse quit, and then Henry Talley was a ranking Republican, and he was in there for one term. And then he got licked unexpectedly. And then I was the ranking Republican. And Mr. Spence was chairman then, old Mr. Spence. And he was an awful nice old guy, but he shouldn't have been in Congress. He was, as I always say, deaf, dumb, and blind. He could hardly see, and he was very deaf, and he was dumb in some ways. Some ways he was very smart. He expressed himself very well. But I got along fine with him. I got along all right with him. In fact, one day we had to get permission from the House, unanimous consent, for the conferees to meet on a bill with the Senate. And it's up to the chairman to get the permission. So. And so we got word to Rayburn that he would recognize Spence to make this. Just takes a second or two to make this thing. It always generally goes through, unless there's a fight. I had a fight about it a little bit later, not about this occasion, but none. And so the speaker recognized him. The gentleman from Kentucky, Mr. Spence. Spence didn't hear him, so he sat right there. So Rayburn right away went on to the next guy. So he said, wait for anything. So I went over and told Spence about it. Said the speaker recognized you didn't hear him. And Brent, his name was Brent Spence. And I said, Brent, I'll get him to recognize you again, and then I'll come back and sit with you here. It was over on the Democratic side, of course. So I went up to this Lou Deschler, the parliamentarian, and said, ask him to recognize Mr. Spence again. And I went back, sat next to Spence, and when he recognized him, I said, now. And he got up and got the permission, see, and 3-4 Democrats came in and said, God, do you have to wet nurse him all the time?
What was the fight you had about that later on?
Well, there was another occasion on a bill that, that's when Henry Talley was the ranking Republican. And we wanted to get permission to bring out the conference, or have permission to go to conference with a bill. And some of the Republicans didn't want that bill, and I didn't want it, as a matter of fact, but we wanted to get the conference over with, because it was just delaying everything. And so Spence got up and asked to go to unanimous consent to go to conference. And this Republican got up down in front of me. I always thought he was pretty dumb, but he got up and objected, see. He wasn't on that committee. So when I got a chance, I just went down to him and I said, Trice, why, what are you butting in on our committee for? He said, we're on that committee, you're not. And he said, well, I didn't like the bill. Well, I said, Christ, I don't like it. But I said, if you try to run our committee, God damn it, I'll vote for it. So that's the way you're going to act. He was just an ordinary member. He wasn't a leader or anything. He's an ordinary member of Congress. And I said, by Jesus, you're not going to run our committee. I hell with you. And I talked up to him a lot, see. And then I went back at the rail and had cigarettes. Pretty soon he drifted back and he said, God, his parents, I always liked you, Mary. He says, I won't object anymore. I said, well, all right. So then I went down and told Spence that he'd get up and ask the unanimous consent again. And I went up to the speaker and I said, we're going to, if you recognize Mr. Spence, you'll ask for that again. He said, well, it'll be objected to. And I said, no, Mr. Speaker, it won't be anymore. So in a minute he recognized Spence, and Spence offered it and wasn't objected to much.
Did your children go to Washington with you?
Quite a little. That is, they didn't stay there, but Kay'd come down, for instance, and Ann'd have a luncheon for her, or she'd bring the kids down, seen John, and the kids came down two or three times for maybe a couple of days, and took in the sights. And Bill went down. I remember he went down before he was out of high school. He and Charlie McKee came down on their own. I met him up at this railroad station. I was staying at the Hay Adams then. I put an extra cot in my room. There was a double, there were twin beds there. I stayed there. You know. Jib came down several times. It was 3-4 days to look around the sights. One thing I had with my kids was when they first came down there, of course I was just getting the ropes, but I'd gotten enough of the ropes to know that a congressman in Washington amounts to something, see. So they wanted to go up to Washington Monument. So I took them up to Washington Monument, and there was a line all the way around the monument, see, like that. And so I went to the guy running the monument, and I said, I'm Congressman Kilburn. I got my fence. Certainly, Congressman. Just a minute. And he stopped the line. Bring your family right in, see. And the kids were madder than the devil at me. Don't do that. Do that, see. Well, I said, you wouldn't have been there. You'd have been there an hour. That meant for me. Get in there and see the monument and so forth. And the same thing happened at the Bureau of Pinning and Engraving. They wanted to go through there. And there was a line way out on the street, the sidewalk. Everything was all, I think it was Easter vacation. There was a big bunch of. So I went into the guy and said, my name's Kilburn. I'm on the Bank and Currency Committee. And I said, I got my family here. I'd like to see him through. Like to have him see through it. Well, he didn't have standing line. What he did was get another guy, and he came and took charge of the family and took him right through the thing. See. Well, they didn't like that very well. And I said, well, that was pretty good. They didn't mind that so much because it wasn't stopping any line. So finally, we went, well, every place it was like that that I took them, where I thought there was going to be a line, why I'd try to get them through, you know. So we took them out of the zoo one day, and they were standing in front, the Marshall kids were there too that time. They were standing in front of the lion's cage, a great big lion. And the lion was lying there looking off over the horizon like that. And they were motioning in front of the lion, trying to make him do something. Seeing his eyes never wavered at all. He's just looking off. Wanted to speak or something, see. And they weren't getting any place. And so I said, well, now, kids, I'll show you how to do this. And I took him aside. And I said, you know, I'm Congressman Kilburn. And you were. And he never batted an eye. See, the lion didn't. The kids. you get into restaurants with them, call up a restaurant ahead of time and say you're a congressman, well, you'd get a table. And they could sit in the family gallery. So that no matter what the galleries were, they could get into our family, the family gallery in the house.
Would they have to carry identification?
No, I'd just go up and tell the doorman about it.
Did you have to carry identification saying that you were a congressman?
We always did, but you never had to show it. Mm-hmm. Never had to. Well, I may have once or twice, I don't know. Yeah, you carried it with your picture on it.
What speeches did you make in Congress?
Oh, well, more when I was ranking Republican, I'd have to speak on every bill. Mm-hmm.
But I'd speak to the whole assembly on every bill.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd speak some and I'd give it real time, see. In fact, remember the last bill was this IDA bill, which I was for, and a lot of Republicans were against. But it was different than foreign aid in that other countries were giving in proportion. The United States to help some of these. And I thought it was a great thing if you get other countries doing, not the United States alone, see. So I spoke about that, and a lot of these guys against it wanted time, and I was the only one that could yield it to them, see. So you have so much time, the time is set. Like an hour or 2 hours to decide or something, an hour and a half, whatever it was. And I'd have to keep a list at the desk there. So the fellows wanted time, and I'd put 3 minutes after one or 5 minutes after one, and so after their names, you see. And I tried to be fair. In fact, as I said on the floor, I said, I think I'm too fair on this. I think I'm giving too much time to the opposition. But the Democrat, Hale Boggs, got up and said the best speech that's been made on this is by Mr. Kilburn, because he said he was against, and he was, against foreign aid. But he's for this bill because it isn't the United States all alone. It's other countries coming in on it. And he said that's the only way you're going to ever end foreign aid, is to have the other countries coughing up, and they want one, or so we want. But I wasn't any orator, so nobody.
And the bill
wasn't
was
any earth shattering affair when I spoke.
The bill was passed?
Yeah.
How long were you a ranking Republican on that committee?
I'm just trying to think. I think about 6 years. Might have been four. There's four anyway.
During that time, did you originate any of the bills that the committee?
We put in bills like the. But the chairman wouldn't let you. You join in the bill, or you try to amend it. But there never was a Kilburn bill, for instance.
Only the chairman could have a bill.
Well, anybody can have a bill, but in order to do any good to see the light of day,
it has to be the chairman.
Why, it had the only chance was through the chairman, see. And, sir, and from the minority, why, they wouldn't, the minute you get the Democrats' name on a bill, why, it would have a chance because they had the majority. But you get a Republican's name, minority member on, and who's going to show that? Nobody. I mean, it's great for demagoguing, and it's great for back home and for the papers and all that, but as far as getting something done.
What year did you decide to retire?
I had thought it over before that. And I'd been there then 25 years, it would have been, at the end of that term, and I thought that was, I was getting to be, I was 71, and I thought I was too old to be there anyway. And running back and forth and so on.
So you don't go along with these congressmen who are in their 70, late 70s? And
no, some, there was a few off and on that were all right, but most of them, no. You take old Manny Sellers, shouldn't have been there for the last 6 years. And he's an awful nice old fella, too. He was a good friend of mine, his office is down from me, and when he had his little Jewish party there for his wife and everything, why, he invited me to come down to it. And he was But this Patman should have retired a long time ago.
Who were your closest friends before you retired?
Well, I didn't have so many then. I suppose the fellas on the committee and, oh, there was Charlie Halleck and Joe Martin was a good friend, except he turned sour when he got licked by Charlie Halleck. And there were old Ben Jensen and...
Who was on the
Ken
committee?
Keating. Well, the fellas on the committee weren't, hadn't been there so long, and Bill Brock, who's up running for the Senate now, was a good member. He was a new Martinor member. And there was a fellow named, from Utah, that was an awful good member. And he had me pose with him to send to his papers back home and the pictures. There were some awful nice guys there, but you didn't, as I said, you didn't make the effort. And furthermore, Ann and I had gotten in a kind of a, we'd go home and have supper in our apartment and wouldn't go out anymore, generally speaking.
Did your wife stay with you more later?
No,
years?
She always had, she came up when it got hot, why she'd come up home. And the congressional club activities would always pretty near slow down and disappear for the summer.
Did she like Washington?
Well, she liked it at first, I think. And she liked a lot of things about it. But she didn't like being away from home and traveling back and forth. We'd have to get somebody to stay with our kids, you see, first. Mm-hmm. All winter.
Yeah. Vietnam was a consideration before you left, wasn't it?
No.
Talking about it some.
Well, you never hear very much.
Really?
Oh, some, yeah. But you see, that was in 64. It was my last year there. There wasn't too much about it.
Nobody really saw it coming then, so much.
Well, I don't think so.
Did you have any thoughts about it at the time, or did you just no. think it was a...
I didn't know much about it. The foreign affairs boys knew a lot more about that. And the armed services fellows.
Did you find that you had much in common as far as what you wanted the Congress to pass with the representative from Vermont or New Hampshire and those
states? Yeah, pretty well.
States.
Pretty well. Mm-hmm. Unless they get some fellows, they did a couple of times, they'd get some, not so much from Vermont. As New Hampshire, they had a fellow in there that was pretty far out, I thought. But I got along all right with it. And Maine, Cliff McIntyre was a good friend of mine.
But they want pretty much the same things as you
I want. Think so, generally speaking. But Massachusetts had some far out ones from Boston. Although the guys that I knew from Massachusetts, they were mostly Democrats, and they were... They were awful good friends of mine. I mean, we'd have a lot of fun together, you know, but boys, they'd vote for this spending business to beat the band.
What kind of recreation did you have in Washington while you were there over the years?
Well, you didn't have... Well, we always go to the opening ball game, for instance, and we get to see George Caffrey was a wonder on that. He was, he threw some guy downtown that he knew. He got about 100 tickets for that. Back of the third base. Good seats. And then he was a bird on a lot of things. Anyway. Then he'd dole them out to, some fellow that he wanted something from would, he wouldn't give them, but he'd let them buy them because you couldn't buy them, you see. It was all sold out. Like the folding room or something. He wanted some special way. He'd give it to the guy who ran the folding room or the postmaster. Or people like that. And he'd say to him, you got some fellas on the floor that you might want to give to. Or let them have some. So sometimes I'd dole out 16, 20 of them to friends of mine. And I remember old, names are terrible. He was chairman of the Labor Committee. He's from South Carolina. And he was rough and ready, very smart fella, but quite a guy. And he came over to me one day. I'd always liked him, and we'd known each other, but not too well. He came over on the Republican side, and I was sitting near the back in the seat there. And he sat down next to me, and he said, can you tell, he says, when the horse is backing into the hitching, he said, and wants to be a good horse and kind of wants a favor. So I said, well, generally, he said, well, he says, I got four constituents coming up, and gosh, they're dying to see that opening ball game. And they're important constituents to me. And I said, well, you want, Brittany had his name. And I said, you want four tickets? Sure. He was my kind of guy, see. Mm-hmm. He felt just the same about things that I did, although he's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. So I got four tickets from George and took him up. But gee, he never got over that. He thought that was great. He was quite a character, that fella. He was an awful good member of Congress.
Where was your seat located in Congress?
Was it, you know seats.
You don't have a certain seat?
No. That's in the Senate.
Just sat anywhere you could.
Anywhere you want. The fellas running the bill. There were two tables. You get the aisle down there. You can see it in that picture there. There's two tables there on each side. Two tables on the Republican side and two tables on the Democrat side. The leadership generally sat behind this table. The Republican leader and the whip and so on. And the fellas running the bill would sit behind this table. And there was a microphone right there. The committee members would sit behind this. But you don't have to, but you did when you run the bill, because you had a table right on and so on, and the committee members would sit there.
Did you find the Kennedy years hard?
No. But hard in what way?
Because there were more Democrats in the House.
Well, there were more Democrats been there all the time I was there.
How many times were you in the majority, the Republicans in the majority?
I think just twice.
Uh-huh. During Eisenhower?
We were in 46. That was Truman. Mm-hmm. Joe Martin was Speaker. And then later on, we were in the majority, I think, at the start of the Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm. Were these two periods easier than all the other periods?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Well, nice, because you weren't so frustrated.
Was the Kennedy Congress any more frustrating than others?
Well, I don't think so.
The Johnson, first Johnson year.
Well, there was always, it depended on what was up. If something was up that you thought was terrible, well, that was frustrating.